Hello for Lover, this is Pacific Waves from RNZ Pacific. I'm Susanna Suisuiki. Coming up,
Everything is okay and we are ready to go to the polls on the 17th.
Final day of election campaigning wraps up in Solomon Islands. Also,
we are here to tell them we must not make this mistake. Step by step, I think there will be war.
Flags and emotions run high during a protest in New Caledonia. And soaring cocoa prices isn't all that sweet. The last day of campaigning in Solomon Islands was a festive, noisy and colourful affair. There are over 300 registered candidates, only 20 are female. Kuroi Hawkins is in Honiara and he spoke with the Chief Electoral Officer, Jasper Anisi, about final preparations.
I think everything is on a grand scheme. Everything is okay and we are ready to go to the polls on the 17th. But we pray that the weather is kind to us so that voters don't get wet during the polling day.
Is the forecast for rain?
I think there's some forecast for the rain, but we pray that things will go in our way. So we pray that there's no rain on Wednesday.
Logistically and everything like that, everything's all sorted?
All sorted. We thank our donor supporters, especially New Zealand and Australia, for providing support to deploy all election materials back to the polling stations and provincial centres.
We're just getting a few questions about like what happens next. Like once the polling days closes at 4 p.m. What's the next stages?
So the next stage will be counting. We will be focusing on counting. So hopefully counting will start on the 18th, but mostly it will be verification of ballot papers and ballot boxes from the polling stations. And once verification is done, then counting will automatically start thereafter. The provincial result, we count in wards. So wards have smaller numbers compared to the constituencies. So you need to count all the wards in order to get the constituency number. So when we do verification, we verify by polling stations. For example, in West Honiara, you have three wards, ward 1, 2, and 3. So we will verify all the polling stations in ward 1. Once that is done, we move to ward 2. Counting will start for ward 1. So and then the process goes on until we complete all three wards, and then counting will start for the constituency, the parliamentary election. So that's why, logically, it will be the provincial elections coming out first than the constituency ones.
Any final message for voters?
Please, voters, be prepared time you come to the polling station because you have to. It's a long day, so you have to come early so that you stop the line and cast your vote blue.
Thank you, Thomas.
Thank you.
In New Caledonia, pro-independence activists took to the streets at the weekend protesting against planned constitutional changes, which they fear will derail their fights for self-determination. They're calling for a U-turn on the changes, which could strengthen voting rights for anti-independence supporters. Lydia Lewis was in New Caledonia as thousands of protesters from both sides poured into the capital, Noumea.
Adorned in the colours of their Kanak flag, blue, red, green and yellow, those who are pro-independence chanted passionately. Pacific Independence Movement spokesperson Arnold Sholeleakava was one of thousands who took to the streets. He says tensions are high.
We are here to tell them we must not make this mistake. Step by step, I think there will be war.
Solange Ponija, who was also at the protest alongside children and elders, says the constitutional change, if pushed through, would tip the balance of voting power away from the indigenous Kanak people of New Caledonia, and they will lose in their fight for independence.
The law will make the Kanaki people a minority because it will open the electoral body to other people who are not Kanaki and who will give their opinion on the accession of Caledonia to full sovereignty.
Pro-France protesters staged a counter-march nearby, dressed in red, white and blue. Security was high with more than 100 additional security forces sent from France. Dressed in blue with big guns, they made their presence felt. A Frenchman who's lived in New Caledonia for two decades says, independence or not, he just wants peace.
La situation est très, 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 très compliquée et très
very complicated and very serious, because if the law is not withdrawn and passed, we are clearly heading towards a civil war. We hope for peace, and we hope that we find a common agreement for both parties. People want peace.
The Frenchman, who wants to remain anonymous out of fear of retribution, says he moved to New Caledonia knowing he would be living on colonised land. Having experienced violence in 2019, the man begs both sides to work together to resolve their differences.
Résident, on est un peu inquiet. On ne sait pas quel.
Us as the residents, we are a little worried. We do not know what the outcome will be. What if the law is not abandoned? We will be heading towards a war.
So far, the bill to change the constitution has been endorsed by the French Senate. Then both the Senate and the National Assembly are set to gather in June to give their final approval.
The price of cacao or cocoa has soared in recent months as chocolate lovers worldwide will attest. In fact, the price has doubled in a year and the impacts are dramatic. Una Brown, who styles herself the cacao ambassador, and while importing cacao, has also been working alongside Pacific communities to help them improve the quality of their product and to raise output. She told Don Wiseman about the effects of the surge in price.
So, you know, in the cacao sector and in the Pacific, there's two real markets. One is the bulk market, and that's the market that buys and doesn't really care about the quality, the moisture content. And then there's the boutique market. Now, the boutique market normally paid double what the bulk market was paying. Now the bulk market's paying even more than what the boutique market was paying a year ago.
Really? For the PNG, Bougainville, Samoa, yeah. Cocoa markets, that largely is to the bulk.
Yes, specifically Papua New Guinea, a huge volume goes to the bulk. Same with the Solomon Islands, and we've been endeavouring to raise the quality so there's a higher price in a sustainable way. Now, the boutique market is much more sustainable. It's more working with ethical chocolate companies and buyers who want long-term difference, where the bulk market is supplying into the commodities market.
Okay. So this might mean the cheapest chocolate is suddenly as expensive as the dearest chocolate.
Exactly, it is. But also what it means right now is that this price that the commodities market are willing to pay, it's actually what the farmers should be paid for being a cacao farmer. It's what the farmers should be paid by kilo. So it's giving a realistic indication of what chocolate should cost. So the chocolate industry and consumers have been benefiting, but the farmers haven't. And that's been the massive gap. So yes. Right now this price is actually reflective of a real price to the farmers, irrelevant of quality.
Yes, and we're talking about $6.50 a kilogram?
Yes.
US dollars?
No, not in US. That would be in Australian dollars.
$6.50, yeah. And that's what they should get.
That's what they should get. And then premium chocolate can be higher than that. But that's not at the farm gate in terms of that's what freight on board would be. You know. Yes. So then the aggregators will pay a slightly lower price at the farm gate to then ship it to the ports.
All right. So these people who haven't had any money in a long time are getting some, but it's having a lot of quite negative impacts.
Yeah, so like I really like to stress that on one level it's really positive in terms of actually a real price being paid, but also then this is going into communities and cultures where there's not used to having a lot of money. And if that money can be reinvested into the farm, into rehabilitation of trees, into long-term expansion of the farms, that's fantastic. But when you haven't been paid a good price for a very long time, like any of us, we suddenly have money in our bank account. We're going to want to spend it and enjoy that.
Is that what's happening?
That is definitely what is happening. But also there's a lot of buyers coming out of the woodwork, I would say, who weren't buying for a long time. They might have an export and license, and now they're going out there. They're buying up beans that would have been bought by ethical long-term strategy projects. So there's a lot of Wild West happening that's not healthy. And this is what happens when you have a sudden peak price in any commodity. All kinds of non-healthy play happens.
So the solution, as you see it, is what?
Well, the first thing is to hope and let, because, you know, consumers have such a voice of power. So if consumers understand that cacao farmers should be paid a healthy price, like around 450 to 550 New Zealand dollars, for example, per kilo, then they have to pay more for chocolate and to enjoy chocolate for it to be in any level ethical. So that this price increase stays, it doesn't drop down. And what we've seen happened 10 years ago, the price goes up crazily and it drops. It doesn't stay at this price level. Now, we need this price to stay and for the chocolate world to change in terms of less is more and high quality, and not just high quality, but for consumers to understand what it really is to be a cacao farmer and to be paid a proper price. But what happens is that, like, there's massive stores of cacao around the world that we don't even know about, you know, because it's bought in futures, it's stored in warehouses, it lasts for years, and those stores are depleted. So there's massive buying to refill those stores. Now, come 12 to 18 months' time, if those stores are full, what we'll see is a price crash. And we also have a lot more farmers getting involved, starting to harvest their trees because they're actually getting a real price. We don't want to see that price crash in 18 months. We want this to stay consistent. And in order to do that, because we're talking about the world stock exchange market, right? So it goes up and down in everything, all shares, everything. So for the Pacific, specifically for the Pacific, what we want to do is over the next 18 months, work with the farming communities to increase their quality. So even if the World Stock Exchange market goes down, we will still be able to get that price for the farmers.
Because you'll be able to sell at boutique price.
Exactly, right? That's a long-term, strong strategy that's not affected by the world stock market, because you've got buyers who build relationships and who look at the long-term and actually care about the farming communities on the ground.
We've had a report recently from the Australian National University, and I've been looking at cocoa farms in PNG and come to some grim assessments in terms of it's a very old labour force. The youth are disinclined to be involved. The quality of the plants, of the trees, is very poor. The industry is teetering and has been teetering for a generation. You no doubt see that sort of thing. Well, what do you think needs to happen?
And I see that across the world, because people ask me, are we going to run out of cacao? And I say, we'll run out of cacao farmers first, because the average age is late 50s and the youth are not interested because it's hard work in the heat of the tropics, and traditionally the price hasn't been worthwhile.
So a decent price will make all the difference.
One, a decent price, yeah. So that's one ground, but price is not everything. What has to also happen is pride and connection to their crop. So what happens throughout the Pacific, apart from Samoa, who use their own cacao and have their own local market. So you go to a stand in Samoa, like a market stand, and you'll see cacao beans for sale, and they drink what they call Cocoa Samoa every day. That does not take place in Papua New Guinea, Solomon Islands, or Vanuatu. So these farmers in the villages are meant to harvest quality cacao and put it in a sack when they don't know what that is, where it's going, what chocolate is, or even that Milo contains those beans. So there's such a disconnect. So they know good pineapples, good pawpaw, good taro, because they consume it. And they ask a proper price for that. But with cacao, they have no connection whatsoever to what that crop is. So there's no pride.
But there are efforts, and they've been underway for a while, to produce chocolate. And we've had chocolate events in Bougainville, I know, and in Solomon Islands.
Yeah.
And I think you also were introducing them to a version of Milo.
Yeah, so for me, it's not just about chocolate and the understanding it goes to chocolate and it goes to chocolate overseas, which is, can be called like white man's food. It's about them understanding it's part of their diet. It can be part of their diet. The cacao bean, the cocoa bean, is actually one of the highest source of magnesium, plant-based iron, antioxidants. So it's extremely healthy. And when they given the opportunity and the invitation to have it themselves, it just changes everything, because the relationship changes. So that's one of my passions and endeavours, is to have the potential for every farming community to understand the history of cacao, the health benefits, and how they can have it in their village with any special equipment, which is just by pound. We roast the beans over a fire, we peel them, we make cocoa tea from the shells, and then we hand pound it into a paste. And if you add sugar, it becomes chocolate. If you don't, you add, you know, like we go and we get wild cane sugar, we squeeze that into a pot of bubbling cacao, cocoa, hot chocolate, and we make local Milo, in effect. And this is the first time that these villagers have tasted their own cacao, even though some of them have harvested it for over 100 years, which is sad, but also the potential for change.
That's Pacific Waves for today. To listen back, head over to rnzi.com/programs. We're also on Spotify, Apple and iHeartRadio. From myself and the RNZ Pacific team, to Fa Soifua.